Welcome to this podcast produced by the International Monetary Fund. In this program, one of the institution's best-kept secrets, how technical assistance and training to governments really does mean better lives for more people. Okay, so let's start with a quote that kind of served as an inspiration for this research, and it's from Adam Smith. Oral, go ahead.
So little else is required to carry a state to the highest degree of opulence, but peace, easy taxes, and a tolerable administration of justice. In other words, institutions matter for development. My name is Oral Williams. I'm the director of one of the IMS Regional Capacity Development Centers located in Accra, Ghana, where we provide capacity development to Anglophone West Africa and Cabo Verde. So six countries all told.
Okay, so Adam Smith was a philosopher and an economist. I'm sure many people who are listening to this podcast know that. He lived in the 1700s, and so he said that more than 250 years ago. What do you think he meant by a tolerable administration of justice, and how does this fit into your study?
So basically, the IMF is in the business of what we call macroeconomic stability. But what is that? It's basically to deliver sustained and inclusive growth and low inflation. Inflation, as we know, is the worst tax on the poor. So the performance of economies depends on, one, the quality of their institutions and human capacity. So if you have, you know, easy taxes, by easy taxes, efficient and easy to collect, and a tolerable administration of justice, there should be a social contract. If I'm paying taxes, the expectation from the populace is a certain efficiency and quality of public services, whether it be health, education, or security.
And so what is the difference between technical assistance and capacity development? I mean, we hear both terms a lot.
Sure.
Maybe give us a bit of a primer of those two concepts.
Okay. So capacity development encompasses technical assistance and training. Technical assistance is where the IMF and other providers help countries, let's say, implement a particular reform. It could be the establishment of a value-added tax, for example. It could be the rebasing of gross domestic product to assess the size of economy. So that hands-on expertise of the reform or the assistance delivered by experts is called technical assistance. Training now, we can train officials in through, for instance, formal coursework or regional workshops through peer-to-peer learning where peers exchange experiences, for instance, on implementing public investment management. So the two components of capacity development are technical assistance and training. Although we know technical assistance and capacity development are often used interchangeably, but capacity development encompasses both technical assistance and training.
So TA and CD, as we often call them, they exist to help governments do a lot of different things, but raising revenues is important and one of the aspects that you focus on in this research. Why are some governments better at collecting taxes than others?
So basically, there are several reasons. One could be just the characteristics of the country. So for instance, small island states such as those in the Caribbean, Seychelles, Cabo Verde, Mauritius, they tend to have higher collection of taxes simply because they are much more open. By open, I mean trade in terms of exports and imports as a share of output is much higher than, let's say, other countries. That's one factor. The second is institutions. Institutions are the foundations that support economic development. And as we know, it takes time to build. So countries that have stronger institutions are better able to collect taxes, whether it's through systems as well as human capacity. And then you have, for instance, at the other extreme, fragile and conflict-afflicted states that have very weak capacity and weak institutions. And by extension, the level of taxes as a proportion of output or GDP is low.
So you run one IMF division that helps governments in West Africa, as you said at the very beginning, but there are several others. How big is capacity development in terms of the IMF's overall strategy?
It's huge, Bruce. I mean, it's about one third of the IMF's budget. I mean, the IMF budget, the last I recall, it's like $1.2 billion. So you're talking north of $300 million a year, almost $400 million. So it's quite sizable. Although the aspects of our work that gets the most attention is lending and perhaps surveillance to a lesser extent, but capacity development, it's hard work, but it's probably what countries need, as Madame Lagarde once said, to fix the roof before the storm, at least while the sun is still shining. Mm-hmm. So it's important to countries. It's on demand.
So they need to ask for it.
They need to ask for it. But it just takes time to build the capacity. It's not a flash in the pan, one-shot deal. It's sustained, consistent, and concerted effort.
So that is an incredibly significant chunk of the budget. How do you actually measure the benefits or you know the returns on that investment?
Right. So we there are several ways we do. We have a framework called a results-based management framework. And basically what it says is that when a member country comes to the IMF and asks for technical assistance or capacity development, we agree on what is the objective. Okay. So if your objective is to raise revenues by 1 percentage point of gross domestic product, that's your objective. And the outcome is you actually achieve it or close enough. But then you have a number of milestones and verifiable indicators to ensure that you get there. Now, once the country asks for this assistance, the area department team is sort of ground central in the discussion because they are the interlocutor that ensures that when we do what we call the Article 4, which is the health check of our member countries, there are recommendations of a set of policies that will ensure macroeconomic stability. Mm. As I mentioned earlier, macroeconomic stability is like fresh air because it gives you low inflation and it gives you sustained and inclusive growth. So once that agreed upon, then we have an accountability framework. And so we can then measure the output through, one, did we achieve it? Two, what was the feedback from the client, the stakeholder? For example, in the case of Sierra Leone, the IMF was responsible in the post-conflict setting to set up the revenue authority, which exists today. So you would have seen revenue goes from practically zero to where they are today. Also, testimonials from the stakeholders are also important because that feedback is critical in terms of what worked, what didn't work. And then lastly, in the case of our paper, we try to measure the impact of capacity development on revenue, which from a quantitative standpoint. So you can have a mix of a qualitative and narrative approach as well as quantitative approaches to assess the effectiveness of capacity development.
So the goal is to build stronger institutions. How clear is the correlation between institutional capacity and quality of life? I mean, do you see poverty levels, for example, drop when governments become stronger?
Yes. I mean, the literature, the research shows that. But we also know that when you have a strong social contracts, where government can safeguard a certain level of social spending, which we also have in IMF lending programs, there's much greater buy-in from the populace. So if my child needs to go to school, and in order to learn, there's some school feeding program associated with that, that's a way of actually directly giving the populace something back from the contribution to taxes. Same with healthcare. If you have this social contract where if I go to the hospital to get a certain minimum of maternity care or child care, then that's the way in which these institutions deliver the public services required by the populace. And then the budget just becomes the instrument through which fiscal policy is implemented.
Okay, so if the benefits of this capacity development are based on the assumption that governments actually are the ones that maximize welfare for people, what happens when a government is not doing that? Maybe it's highly inefficient or corrupt, or maybe the country is in the midst of a major conflict. I mean, what should the approach be in those circumstances?
As I mentioned earlier, the delivery of capacity is on demand. However, let's say, for instance, a particular country, a hypothetical country, is asking for help in revenue administration when there is a lot of leakages through exemptions and a failure to collect the taxes. Then the accountability framework and the role of the area department country team will put this squarely on the table that, you know, we have been delivering this set of interventions for some time. However, we are not receiving the desired results. There's another dimension to the relationship. In terms of the regional capacity development centers, it's a joint venture between the member countries, the IMF, and development partners. So member countries do put some skin in the game through member contributions. So really, if you're contributing in a financial way and in a material way and not getting something back, then there's a basis for which there can be a conversation on how do we get things right. So that's the accountability framework in which we couch the discussion when there is a failure to implement the agreed upon interventions.
So these are, as you said, fairly forward-looking programs. This technical assistance outcomes may take years and years before we see the benefits, or before governments see the benefits. How do you manage this with governments who very often have short-term political objectives?
So we keep dancing even when the music is not playing, because you have to stay engaged. And as I mentioned earlier, it takes time to build capacity. And we recognize the political economy considerations in what we do. We also know that whenever there's a change, for instance, there's a change in an administration, it takes time for the team to coalesce and come together. However, in many instances, their career civil servants or functionaries who remain, even though the administrations may change, but we stay engaged. And this is particularly so in the case of fragile and other low-income countries where you also have staff turnover as well. So you almost have to be more a friend indeed than a friend in need. Mm-hmm. So you have to just keep engaging, even though from a political economy standpoint, a particular administration may not be implementing the reforms that were initially agreed upon. However, as I mentioned, surveys of the membership have shown that most of the IMF membership really value capacity development because it's on demand. And so it's almost like a sweetener, the cherry on the cake, as opposed to in a program relationship where there's, sort of stronger conditionality. But you have to stay engaged simply because it just takes time to build the capacity that you need.
So what is it about your study that's different from other studies on this topic? And, how might this research advance your objectives or the objectives of the member countries?
Okay, so the study was one of the first of its type from a quantitative standpoint, simply because just by saying something is good for you, sometimes one needs evidence-based proof. And so it was one of the first that looked at IMF capacity development over time for over 115 countries. And it did show, from an economic statistical standpoint, that the capacity development does improve revenues. And in the COVID context, where member countries face this trilemma of how do we sure keep spending going when we need to raise revenues in a pandemic and we have rising debt levels because of government's response to save lives during the pandemic. Having this sort of study that unequivocally shows that it does matter, it does give you a bang for your buck, incentivizes member countries to implement the reforms. So I think that's good. When you complement this with other pilots that show, or case studies that show that it does work when you do a narrative approach, like an event study, what was the state of play before and what was the state of play after, then it also encourages our development partners that finance quite a significant portion of capacity development, that it's in their best interest or the use of their taxpayers' money to finance or contribute to the development of capacity in IMF member countries.
Oral Williams, always a pleasure talking to you. Thanks so much for sharing this research.
Most welcome, Bruce, anytime. Good talking to you too.
Oral Williams heads the IMF Regional Capacity Development Center for Anglophone West Africa. He's also co-author with economists Ralph Shammy and Alorm Darkey of a study on the impact of technical assistance on revenue mobilization, titled A Time to Build. Check it out at imf.org. And look for other IMF podcasts wherever you get your podcasts. You can also follow us on Twitter @IMF_podcast. I'm Bruce Edwards. Thanks for listening.